This is the Women's Protection and Empowerment Podcast, where we give space to talking about women and girls in humanitarian settings. At International Rescue Committee, we deliver innovative programs focused on preventing and responding to violence against women and girls. We are in pursuit of a world where women and girls live free from violence as valued and respected members of their community. This movement is about equitable access to opportunities.
Empowering women and girls means a lot for development of the next generation, and it's important for the development of a country.
It's about catalysts for change.
Women and girls are not just the faces of poverty. They're also the key to overcoming.
It's about voice and respect.
The path to victory is still long, and I'm not ready to give up. This has become to me more than a work, but a passion to see women and the girls regaining what has been for long denied to them.
From IRC, this is the WPE Podcast. I'm Christy Crabtree. Cash for Protection programming is not a brand new concept within the humanitarian community at this point, but there's still quite a way to go until cash for GBV prevention and response is systematically funded, implemented at scale, and inclusive of the most marginalized GBV survivors. LGBTQIA+ individuals are systematically left out of humanitarian programming and policies, including GBV and cash programming. And adolescent girls, including married and out-of-school girls, are often left out of cash and GBV programs, despite the number of GBV risks they face at home and in their communities. And persons living with disabilities are at heightened risk of GBV, yet are often an afterthought in program design and may even be outright unwelcome to access services due to the stigma they face. There are so many unfulfilled and urgent protection needs amongst these marginalized groups of GBV survivors. And we know cash integrated into GBV case management can be life-saving. So IRC has been reflecting on how together with its partners, we can proactively be inclusive of GBV survivors in all their diversity. Today, colleagues based in the Middle East will share their experience and recommendations to transform these aspirations of inclusion into a reality. So I'm excited to welcome them both here today.
Hi, I'm Riem Sharbash, Senior Response Officer in Jordan Country Program.
And this is Dina Arafa from Jordan Country Program, the Women's Protection and Empowerment Coordinator.
Thanks both. And you may recognize Dina from our earlier episode on cash and GBV response, the design choices that go into that. Rain, why don't you start with how can cash and specifically cash within GBV programming be a way to advance inclusion agendas?
Integrating cash assistance within the GBV programs aims to protect the most vulnerable from harm, support women and girls through the provision of legal services and cash for legal documentation and representation. These services, the survivors are given space to access available services, have some financial independence, meet basic needs, and become resilient.
Participants in the Women's Protection and Empowerment Program have included GBV survivors who are LGBTQIA+ individuals. What are some of the things you've heard directly from that community when they're seeking protection and cash support?
Now, most of the LGBTQIA+ community shared that they prefer to communicate with the IRC through hotline calls and WhatsApp messages. However, fewer participants preferring giving feedback or asking questions through the help desk. Now, based on their feedback, this shows that participants would prefer less physical meetings in offices with the service providers. Therefore, there's a lack of trust that participants have in service providers since they believe these spaces to be discriminatory towards the LGBT+ individuals. On the other hand, a significant number of participants also expressed interest in receiving more information about the IRC services and desired for different types of communication outlets to be used, such as the WhatsApp, the social media channels, and online communication platforms.
That's really interesting. And I think a really practical example of ways that outreach can be shifted to reach more diverse groups of people. I'm curious, what did you find to be some of the bigger challenges to ensuring these groups are fully included in cash for protection programs including adolescents and persons living with disabilities.
Due to COVID-19 movement restrictions, women and girls have been trapped at home with their perpetrators, increasing their isolation and preventing them from seeking help and accessing social services and their personal support network. Many women and girls lack access to mobile devices or financial means to recharge mobile devices. Also, during lockdown, women had trouble reporting GBV violence due to the lack of privacy, due to the increased presence of the perpetrator in the house, and the closure of women's organizations and specialized GBV agencies and reduced freedom of movement in general. According to the responses from a survey that was collected by IRC, the results showed a lack of awareness about services provided in local communities. These services include protection, legal and health services that are not meant to be inclusive for all community members, including LGBTQI plus members. For example, 68% of participants stated that they were unaware of how to access support services in case of violence. Meanwhile, 60% of participants experienced violence during the lockdown, and 82% noticed an increase in tensions amongst family members during COVID. This means many LGBTQI plus community members and other vulnerable groups are facing violence with little to no knowledge about the pre-existing protection services set in place. In regards to employment, many transgender, lesbian, and visible LGBTQI plus individuals were already working from home due to discrimination in the workforce, causing a lack of employment for LGBTQI plus individuals, particularly transgender individuals. Now, these individuals were working in vocational jobs such as accessory production, catering, and tailoring. Due to the quarantine, there was a lack of demand for their services, and delivery was unavailable to supply their goods. Regarding needs, members of the LGBTI community raised awareness on Facebook and other platforms, but there were still many limitations due to safety risks. The lack of employment for LGBTIQ plus individuals during the COVID-19 lockdown led for community members to be more vulnerable at this time. This included individuals being evicted from their homes and eventually becoming homeless. These individuals lacked access to protection services due to the circumstances caused by COVID-19 lockdown and fear of LGBTQI plus discrimination by service protections. And the overall organizational services were found not to be easily accessible to LGBTQI plus members due to the lack of communication, unclear knowledge about services provided, and expected discrimination from organization staff towards the committee members. Some participants also seemed unaware that organizations are obliged to provide services without discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity.
A lot to unpack from that. There's a lot there about outreach and awareness of services and additional barriers. You know, even if you're following a preference from a large portion of a particular group to have remote services, how do you get the word out about that? And also, how do you work with people who may not have regular access to mobile devices? I'm curious if you all talked about that aspect at all.
We have different program designs that help enriching more beneficiaries and helping in gender transformation, such as the activity that we have under the WP that is called the gender discussion groups. It is IRC-led women and their male partners or heads of the households through a structured participatory process of reflection on their experiences, attitudes, and behaviors in relation to the household economic decision-making. Now, that aims to reducing the tension and risk of intimate partner violence, increasing equitable decision-making to increase women's access to and control of economic resources. The second activity or the service that we provide is the outreach prevention services. Now, the IRC always aims to raise awareness of available protection and health services and bring to light the key issues facing the community. Awareness sessions and the male engagement sessions for men and boys aim to increase their consciousness of the harmful impacts of the gender-based violence on women and girls and the broader community, and sharing information that enables them to support women and girls' access to services when they do experience harm. Another service or approach that IRC focuses on is the partnership approach, and that is in collaboration with the local NGOs and CBOs as a commitment to localization and sustainability of the long-term interventions and gender transformative change in local communities. IRC recognizes that collaborative partnerships with civil society actors can deliver more effective, responsive, and durable assistance that reaches more people and produces better outcomes for the communities we serve. In addition to that, the partnerships with the government, ministries, and municipalities can have an enormous impact on service delivery and influence policy, resulting in enduring structural changes.
I'm curious to talk a little bit more about the partnership aspect, since that does seem to be such a topic of conversation for so many different sectors. But looking at this specific topic of really being inclusive with GBV and cash programming, can you talk a little bit more about who you think would be a good civil society partner for this kind of inclusion work and some tips on how you go forward with that partnership to really make it succeed?
Working with the partners and focusing on the capacity sharing and the capacity building. Now, IRC is working with different number of partners on the case management component as a whole. As we just said previously, that the linking between the comprehensive case management and the cash for protection is very important, so you can provide comprehensive services to the beneficiaries. The first thing and the most important thing is really building the capacity of the service provider of the provision of the cash assistance, so you wouldn't cause more harm to the beneficiaries, making sure that it's all about the service delivery. So we make sure that the service is being delivered through having different parties working with you within your organization. Starting this as a pilot with the partners. So for instance, our partners now that we're working with, the cash for protection component will be implemented by the second year of the partnership, not the first year. So you can take advantage of the first year for the capacity sharing, the capacity building, making sure that the system of the GBV cases is being used correctly, the data reflection, and et cetera.
Those particular aspects of making partnerships work, because it's not just a all-in one-time effort and then it goes smoothly from there, but it takes a bit of work to really make that something strong and something that lasts. I'm curious, you know, there's been a lot that's changed during the pandemic. So looking at this topic, how has the pandemic called for new ways of working to reach survivors? I know we talked a little bit about using hotlines and more remote ways to reach people, but particularly those that are identifying as LGBTQIA+, or adolescents, or persons living with disabilities. How has the pandemic changed how you reach them as survivors?
Well, at the beginning of the pandemic and during the lockdown, WP had to adapt its delivery model to online service delivery for almost all services, a lot of services, such as the counseling and GBV awareness raising sessions. After the lockdown, and taking into consideration the challenges and feedback shared by our beneficiaries that we just shared, we adapted a mixed approach of in-person and online service delivery. That was also beneficial for women who prefer to stay at home with their kids to receive services after the government's announcement of the defense law and school shutdown. Also, the counselors shifted their working hours to give more space for the survivors for the online services when the partner is not around. Actually, the online services were available in more than one social media way. You know, we had WhatsApp, we had Zoom, we had different applications in order to get to anyone.
I'm curious, can you talk a little bit more about how you set up that, especially on WhatsApp? Did you have a group that you set up? Did you do outreach through WhatsApp? Or was it just a space to continually connect with people who had already come in person?
We tried to reach out to the beneficiaries through our network community in the camps and the urban areas and our centers, especially through the outreach team. We had a lot of volunteers who are helping us also to reach out to more people.
In addition to that, Christy, it is based on the service itself. So for instance, the case management, the individual counseling sessions, it's only through, you know, the counselor and the beneficiary themselves. However, for the group activities such as the recreational, the psychosocial support group counseling, there would be a number of people benefiting from the service at once. Now, there's another interesting thing which we worked on is the digital illiteracy, and I was one of them, to be honest. You know, when once the pandemic started, we all had to start using the online platforms, the Zoom, for instance, so we can keep up with the activities and keeping up with what's going on. So there were refresher sessions or like introduction sessions to the beneficiaries on how to use Zoom, how to use different communication channels, and how to create groups as well so they can benefit from the IRC online services.
That's great. I think that's something that a lot of organizations have probably had to pick up and run with and figure out on the fly. But I think it's one nice unintended benefit of having to adapt our programming is that maybe we've reached more people in creating that space to connect online and connect in different ways. I want to talk about your recommendations. You know, for someone who's listening to this, who maybe has cash programming integrated into GBV case management or other GBV response or prevention services, what are your biggest recommendations that resulted from your reflection, from your work on inclusion? Can you pick out some of those and share those?
Absolutely. So like for now, as WPE, we have three main recommendations, and those are based on the survey conducted previously back in October. Some of the things we heard about it directly from the LGBTQIA+ community, and the challenges for those who seek protection and cash support. When I talk about the first recommendation is that IRC needs to continue working towards drafting and implementing inclusive policies focused on addressing discrimination towards the LGBTI plus individuals within the IRC. So I'm talking about the staff and the beneficiaries. That would include raising awareness of diversity and inclusion through visible code of conduct in the workplace, and training sessions for frontliners so they can understand the code of conduct in relation to sexual orientation and gender identity. And to conduct ongoing training sessions with the staff on inclusivity measures, so we ensure that the provision of equal services for the LGBTI plus community is being in place. Also, the data collection methods to be more gender inclusive, such as recognizing the diversity of gender in biodata, so like gender, man, woman, other, and asking about preferred pronoun in interviews and in filling the forms as well. In addition to what I have mentioned, and due to the increase of protection needs for the LGBTI plus persons, such beneficiaries receiving cash assistance need to be provided with comprehensive services by being referred to protection departments and case management. In addition, referral mechanisms need to be further developed internally and externally within IRC to ensure inclusivity in referral forms and to update service mapping information to cover services specific to the LGBTI plus clients. Now, moreover, staff should have also complete understanding of sensitive contexts and safe measures needed when supporting LGBTI plus clients. And while collecting information and data, for example, to be aware that respondents should be in a safe space when sharing personal information. The second recommendation, the LGBTI plus members in Jordan face particular risks related to visibility, which increases, of course, their lack of mobility. Accordingly, the LGBTI plus individuals might avoid leaving their homes or safe spaces due to the risk found in public. IRC should deliver services through a mobile approach and communicate through different channels such as the WhatsApp and the hotlines, as well as the online platforms. So to help deliver services safely to LGBTI plus persons, as that was stated in the survey. The third and the final one is to collaborate with the local grassroots safe spaces and organizations protecting LGBTI plus communities in order to enhance outreach and provide protection services through available safe spaces.
shouldn't be surprised by now, Dina, with how comprehensive the cash programming is that you set up in Jordan. It's really impressive to hear how you're looking at this from a lot of different perspectives in terms of like how you get your own house in order, right? How staff are trained on how to best receive and work with different types of communities, how you're incorporating things like preferred pronouns, having those discussions, and really expanding out ways that you think about safety in terms of outreach, be that within IRC or connecting up with other organizations who have some kind of connection that feels safe to different types of communities that can then be part of our referral pathway and building out on that collaboration. It's really impressive work. I'm curious for either of you if there's, you know, anything else you'd like to add to this. I mean, if we're thinking about somebody who's listening to this and really unfamiliar with this work, is there anything else that you'd pass on to them as kind of first step or a way to really look at inclusion in terms of cash distribution within GBV programming?
I would like to emphasize that the IRC services are available for everyone. We encourage everyone to approach us for any support needed. The service delivery is important regardless of anything in this world. We are all human beings and we all need support when we need it. So it doesn't matter who am I and what am I doing in my life as long as I'm a human being. And that's what matters. And this message is as well for the service providers. It's just to focus on the service delivery, being neutral and actually being really a human being, helping others while they are in need. No matter of the differences, no matter of what, anything that could stop the service delivery.
Rain, how about on your side? Anything else you'd like to add to this conversation?
I also would like to take this opportunity to emphasize on the importance of promoting equitable access to opportunities and services for all beneficiaries and colleagues as well, as per IRC core values.
It's clear there's still a lot of work to do so the humanitarian community is no longer leaving behind any GBV survivors in humanitarian response. The time is now to make the necessary changes and take forward some of the recommendations that Rain and Dina shared today. Inclusive programming is a cornerstone of evidence-based programming, and for learning how cash within GBV response can best be both tailored and scaled to meet the needs of all survivors. So thank you again, Rain and Dina. I appreciate having you on the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you, Christy.
Safety, voice, respect. Join the WPE movement.